There's so many versions of it. There's CSI Miami, CSI New York, just CSI, which is in Las Vegas. I mean, what next? CSI Albuquerque?
Yeah. With all this forensic mania on TV, you'd expect to see it turning up in the bookshelves. And so I wasn't really surprised to see a book out there called The Science of Sherlock Holmes, with the subtitle From Baskerville Hall to the Valley of Fear, The Real Forensics Behind the Great Detective's Greatest Cases. It's by E.J. Wagner. So, E.J., are you a fan of all these CSI shows on television right now?
Well, sad to say, no, I'm not. I think they're very dramatic. Very often they're exciting to watch, but they are not very accurate.
No, but, you know, that's because they solve everything in 60 minutes, and remarkably.
Yes, I know, and people show up at crime scenes wearing inappropriate clothing and so on.
Well, okay, let's go to the Sherlock Holmes angle of your book. When did you first become a fan?
Of Sherlock Holmes, I think I was a kid. I was in junior high school, and I had a teacher who would take us to the park during lunch hours and read supplementary material, you know, things he thought we should have read in school that were not on the curriculum. And one day it was a Sherlock Holmes story, and I fell in love.
Nice.
Yeah, once again, another great story about teachers shaping our lives.
It's been a theme today.
Yeah,
for us.
Yes. And now, you think of Sherlock Holmes, of course, and we think of, obviously, he's a great fictional character. So why is he a good way, as a piece of a fictional character, to look at the history of forensics?
Well, because the Sherlock Holmes stories were written during the period when forensic science was just really becoming a separate discipline. Up until that time, it was really medical specialty, which used to be known as medical jurisprudence, and it kind of was beginning to throw off the shackles of superstition and folklore and all these bizarre beliefs we had about the kind of people who committed crimes. And we began to take a really good, hard, organized look at criminalistics, criminology, and Sherlock Holmes was explaining it to the middle class, the readers.
So, techniques that were used by Sherlock Holmes, are any of them still used today?
Oh, yes. Well, the very basic one is the way a crime scene is processed. Because no matter how sophisticated your tests, you know, what kind of a great lab you have, if that crime scene is not processed properly, if evidence is not tagged, if it isn't accounted for, if there is not a signature for everyone who's held it, touched it, had anything to do with it, then the evidence that winds up in the laboratory is already contaminated. So that very basic thing, let's be organized, and the way Holmes always said, you know, don't theorize before one has data. Make sure the data is good. It's still true today.
Hmm.
Now, you point out in the book that early forensics sort of challenged a lot of bizarre folklore surrounding medicine at that time. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, for instance, there was a firm belief that tuberculosis was a form of vampirism.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, because if you think about it, you can see where they got the idea. One member of the family would succumb to this wasting disease, which involved losing blood, losing a great deal of weight, and then they would die. And then years later, another member of the family would come down with the same symptoms. The interpretation they would place on this is that the original deceased individual had come back to drain the blood of their inheritors.
Wow.
Hmm.
And what they would do, of course, to cure it, and we still find that, by the way, in the United States today, in New England cemeteries, very old ones, when they excavate graves, they sometimes find that the head has been severed and placed between the legs of the corpse, because that was believed a way to kind of deprive the vampire of power.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Okay, give us some other ones.
Is it really?
Yeah, those are cool.
Well, there was also belief in phrenology, you know, that by examining the shape of the skull, one could determine character.
That's still around a little bit today, isn't it?
It is. It's what we call a pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean it doesn't have its adherents. It's up there with astrology and so on. But Mark Twain, when he was in England, as a matter of fact, saw a sign advertising the services of a phrenologist. And Mark Twain, being a very irreverent sort of person, went in and had his character read and didn't give his name, and came back a few months later giving another name and had his character read again, which was completely different from the first one, which gave Mark Twain a terrific opportunity to write an article.
And he didn't need much of an excuse, usually.
No. He didn't need an excuse at all.
So how much did Sir Arthur Conan Doyle actually know about forensics himself?
Well, actually, he knew quite a lot because he was a physician. And his mentor in medical school had been a gentleman named Joseph Bell, who was known for his very astute diagnostic abilities. And he would talk about just looking at a patient, watching the way he walked and listening to his speech, watching his dress. And he would be able to draw very accurate conclusions about the man's medical condition. And Conan Doyle became fascinated with this. When he began to write in his off hours while he was waiting for patients, he began to write the Sherlock Holmes stories, and he based Sherlock Holmes on Joseph Bell.
So if Sherlock Holmes were alive today, and there were a real detective and an alive today, how do you think he would regard these sort of new crime-solving techniques, specifically I'm thinking DNA and other such things?
Oh, I think that he would probably say what he always did about, you know, the DNA is just great as long as the data that goes in is accurate.
How much fun was it for you as a Sherlock Holmes fan to write this book?
Well, it was very absorbing, but actually what I do ordinarily is lecture on the history of forensic science, so this kind of fit right in with it. And I got to spend lots of time going over old autopsy reports and sort of crumbling medical texts, and I had a wonderful time.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating topic. Thanks so much, E.J. E.J. Wagner is the author of the book, The Science of Sherlock Holmes.